Today's episode is brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. In-person services are back with some restrictions to help ensure everyone stays safe and healthy. For the latest, visit their website at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Today's top story, a new chapter for our old library took a big step forward last week. City Council gave unanimous approval of a proposal to sell the old Canby Public Library building to be redeveloped as a brew pub, cidery, and family-friendly arcade. However, the proposal was not without controversy Wednesday night. Several prominent community members testified in opposition. Oregon City Brewing Company offered to purchase the building for $500,000. The city would also chip in a $200,000 state revitalization grant that was awarded to the property. The offer was far below the $950,000 the building was appraised for at several years ago. But city leaders supported the project because it closely fit their vision for an active destination establishment that would draw visitors to the downtown core. Plus, they know the property needs work. OC Brewing estimated the price tag for their remodel of the former library at $2.2 to $2.3 million. The proposal garnered the support of Canby staff and was enthusiastically received by many residents on the Canby Currents Facebook page last week. But not everyone was thrilled about the sale. Peter Hostetler, owner of Equipment Northwest and former vice president of local construction firm KHC Inc., questioned the timing, asking price, listing, and whether the whole business was in the best interest of Canby citizens. Hostetler claimed the city had failed to aggressively market the property or even list it on a commercial real estate marketplace like LoopNet and CoStar. He also contended they may have violated state laws by not noticing the sale in a local newspaper, though staff said it was placed in the Oregonian and there were publishing deadlines.
This most recent proposal process was rushed in the beginning, hasn't followed state statute, and hasn't been transparent with the community. We have roads needing maintenance, water quality that is terrible, and a whole community that needs various services. The responsible thing to do here is to terminate these exclusive negotiations, hire a professional broker to market and get the top dollar for this city-owned property, and then invest the community at large. If the Beer Library still wants to buy the building, then they will do so at market price. When a process is barely advertised and then selects the proposal that offers the least amount of money, a citizen has to wonder what the hell the elected officials are doing and who is really benefiting.
In response, Administrator Archer and City Attorney Joe Lindsay assured councilors that the process undertaken in this case was legal, reasonable, and commonplace. Listing the property on a commercial real estate marketplace was also an option the city could have pursued, Archer allowed, and it may have resulted in a higher selling price, but it would have been at the cost of the city having less say in the type of business that ultimately occupied the space. Here's Canby City Administrator Scott Archer.
The council made decisions along the way to choose to go about this process in a specific way so that you could have a say in what happens at the property versus simply putting it up for sale to the highest bidder and having essentially no control over who or what ends up in the building. And so I just want to assure you that you're within your rights to have this type of process versus another one. And you know, in other instances, you, a council, may choose to just simply sell a property to a high bidder that you know, have less interest in what ends up on the property.
Finally, Mary Hanlon, founder and principal of Hanlon Development, which is the managing member of the Dahlia and is leading the redevelopment of the Canby Civic Block, criticized the sale and the process. Hanlon says she believes the city had failed to uphold its end of their public-private partnership.
Is the communication around this has been disturbingly poor. I just this week learned that this item was on the agenda. It's been privately negotiated behind closed doors. And as far as I knew, the last thing was a public market. And then there were just private negotiations going on. And it's a project that directly affects what we're doing at the Civic Block and the future of it and how we get there.
But Lindsay argued the city had kept or even exceeded every point they had agreed to in their contract. He also contested that the process had not been done in the dark. Having not zero but three different expressions of interest over the last 4 years, at what point did anyone in this community not know that we were looking for a suitor for this building? Lindsay asked incredulously at one point in the meeting. In the end, the vote to approve the sale to Oregon City Brewing Company was unanimous. The matter must come up for a second reading in 2 weeks to become official. OC Brewing owner Bryce Morrow told Now Hear This Canby last week that they hope to hit the ground running and have the bulk of construction completed by April 2022. The state has pulled the liquor license of Canby's Route 99 Roadhouse for its failure to follow COVID-related public health guidelines. These include social distancing and wearing masks, the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, or OLCC, reported this week. Issued February 2nd, the suspension prohibits Route 99 from selling any alcoholic beverages. The OLCC said it received complaints last month that Route 99 was allowing groups of customers to gather and consume food and alcohol inside the premises, in violation of coronavirus restrictions for Clackamas County that prohibit indoor dining. OLCC enforcement staff spoke with the owners and operators of Route 99 to, quote, provide education and verbal instructions on how the business could come into compliance, end quote, but eventually conducted a site visit after continuing to receive complaints. Upon arriving at the business for an in-person inspection, compliance staff observed that Route 99's parking lot was close to full and could see patrons and staff inside the building socializing without masks, OLCC said in a press release last week. Route 99 was cited for violating the governor's executive orders governing bars and restaurants as well as reopening guidelines, OLCC said. They may face additional charges for liquor rule violations. The establishment is entitled to request an administrative hearing to challenge the OLCC's actions. Reinstating the bar's license to serve would be contingent upon a settlement with OLCC. This could involve a fine or a certain number of days suspended, depending on the facts of the case. It really depends on their willingness and how fast they want to resolve this, OLCC spokesman Brian Haley told Now Hear This Canby. The whole goal from us is to educate. You know, we've been given these orders as well. We understand they're not as popular with the industry. We get that, and we're trying to work through that as best as we can. Rumors of open restaurants, particularly in more rural areas, have become more common in the new year, as owners struggle to stay afloat in many parts of the state where indoor dining remains prohibited. Some, like the Carver Hangar, Eagle Creek Saloon, and Redland Cafe, have been more open about their defiance than others. Sandy Mayor Stan Pulliam encouraged restaurants, gyms, and other businesses in his cities to reopen last month at a less restrictive tier of the governor's coronavirus guidelines, which still require mask wearing in public and severely reduced occupancy levels. While decrying the plans by Pulliam and other leaders in late December, Governor Brown said she would encourage enforcement agencies like OLCC to take an education-first approach, with measures like fines and suspensions being a last resort. two Canby elected officials have agreed to participate in mediation. This is an attempt to settle a dispute that has disrupted portions of all three city council meetings so far in 2021. It all began at the January 6th meeting when, during a protracted attempt to elect a council president, Councillor Sarah Spoon accused another council member, Sean Varwig, of visiting a strip club in Bend in 2019 while on a city-sponsored trip and using a city vehicle. Varwig denied the claim at the time and, at the subsequent January 20 meeting, accused Spoon of manufacturing the story in retaliation for his refusal to go along with what he characterized as an unethical quid pro quo. Mayor Brian Hodson, in coordination with City Administrator Scott Archer and City Attorney Joe Lindsay, met with Varwig and Spoon on multiple separate occasions last month in an attempt to broker a resolution, but to no avail. At the February 3rd meeting last week, Hodson revisited the subject, said he wanted to gauge the councillor's support for two possible resolutions. One, to censure, i.e. publicly recommend, Spoon, and two, to use city staff or resources to investigate the matter. Varwig made it clear that he asked for a resolution to censure Spoon, and he has invited the probe.
I've asked for the censure. I did. I think that it was incredibly inappropriate to make those accusations. It was a year and a half after the fact of when you're saying this happened. So yeah, it's not true. It didn't happen. I'm okay with any investigation because I'm on the right side of it. So go ahead and investigate away. I called Oregon Ethics Commission. They said that they handle stuff that's financial. They did not want to take on this investigation. So I don't know what we can do beyond there. I asked them to investigate myself because I know that I'm in the right side of this, on the right side of this.
For her part, Spoon did not revisit her side of the story, but did suggest that if her colleagues choose to censure her, it should not be a one-sided action.
The other comment I would make is that I think it's a fair conversation to talk about what conduct's appropriate and not appropriate. I would remind people, though, that Councillor Varwig also made serious accusations in his statement last week, and so if I'm going to be reprimanded, it would seem that his conduct in the most recent meeting was not really all that different than mine, and it would require a reprimand or a censure of both of us in order to actually uphold the procedures and policies.
Councillors Chris Bangs and Greg Parker said they were not in favor of censuring anyone, at least not until more was known about the events in question. These events include both Spoon's claims about what happened in Bend, as well as Varwig's allegations about the quid pro quo. They argued Spoon's initial comments had been at the implicit request of Mayor Hodson, who had asked all councillors to explain their votes in an effort to break the deadlock. Others, like Council President Tracy Hensley, appeared to be in favor of some discipline being directed towards Councillor Spoon, feeling that her accusation, true or not, had been presented in a way that was inappropriate and brought unnecessary embarrassment and trouble to Varwig, the council, and city itself.
The other issue is the behavior of Councillor Spoon and the way it came out. Yes, she was asked about explaining her vote. She could have simply has stated she had a personal reason that she could discuss with you later, and that landed it there. Instead, decided to build up to it, telling everybody how embarrassing it was going to be. And I didn't think that was behavior becoming of a sitting counselor. And I agree with Councillor Tibbles that
while acknowledging much of the frustration and awkwardness Bangs alluded to, Councillor Jordan Tibbles felt Spoon's behavior had plainly violated board policies and codes of conduct requiring members to treat each other with respect and decorum.
Why do we have those policies in place if we're not going to do anything about them? I mean, does someone want to make a motion to get rid of them? Because I'm afraid that by doing nothing, we have basically said that's perfectly acceptable. And I stated on the day of, it doesn't matter, I think, either way, the truth of whatever allegation. It just, if we're saying it's okay to air personal grievances or make false statements, whichever one it is, because I don't know which one it is, then if we're saying that that's acceptable, I'm afraid what our council is going to look like for the next couple years.
As the discussion passed the 1 hour mark, some of the frustration appeared to set in, though Councillor Chris Bangs and others still seemed understanding and respectful of the positions of Varwig and Spoon.
This is an awkward spot because, you know, if Sarah, if Counselor Spoon's accusations are true, I'd be really mad if I were her and we're treated like this. And if Counselor Varwig's version is true, I'd be really mad and upset. And, you know, frankly, I'm a little upset anyway. And just because we've spent so much of the city's time dealing with it already. But the rest of us, we don't know. So we're just operating in the dark and plodding around.
Asked how the board could move forward without some kind of closure, whether it be censure or an investigation, Spoon offered her opinion that, quote, on city council, you don't always get closure, and that's okay, end quote. She also said she believed and believes it has been demonstrated that she and Varwig can continue to work together on city business despite their personal disagreements. Councillor Greg Parker said he agreed.
I talked to one of our department heads the other day and I said, how's this playing with staff? And he said, what I told my staff is if I have a contract and I need to take it to council, I know that they'll treat me fairly, that they'll be responsible. And so that's our job. We don't have to like each other. We just have to show up and do our job.
In the end, both Spoon and Varwig agreed to participate in a mediation process, which Lindsay said could likely be arranged without any cost to the city. If there is any cost associated, both counselors volunteered to cover their own fees. Marion County this week became the first in Oregon to designate a local safety corridor along McKay, Yergin, and Allen roads. This is a route that has seen a rise in fatal crashes since the Newburgh-Dundee bypass opened in 2018. The safety corridor designation doubles traffic fines in the designated area. The designated area is located in between Oregon Highway 219 and Interstate 5. County officials anticipate safety corridor signs will be installed early next week. The action was made possible under House Bill 3213, which allowed the Oregon Department of Transportation to create a safety corridor pilot program for counties. Safety corridors have been designated on state highways for many years. The county officials said they have proven effective at reducing crash rates. For several years, people have been bypassing bottlenecks on I-5 through Marion County's rural roads, Marion County Commissioner Colm Wills said. We appreciate the work of Representative Bill Post and other legislators who sponsored this legislation to make county safety corridors a possibility. We've done a great deal of work to get to this point and appreciate the cooperation between the county, state, and local communities to help improve traffic safety in northern Marion County. The McKay-Yergin-Ellen corridor has been a high priority for the past several years due to higher than expected crash rates and people driving at excessive speeds, county officials said. County Public Works has already installed safety enhancements such as center line rumble strips and wider stripping, larger warning speed limit and stop signs, additional pavement markings, and designated no passing zones. Future enhancements include flashing red beacons on stop signs, increased intersection lighting, and driver speed feedback signs. The county is also pursuing grant funds for the construction of centerline turn pockets at major intersections within the corridor and other enhancements. The Marion County Sheriff's Office has coordinated with neighboring agencies to conduct targeted patrols to educate drivers on speed and other safety issues. A man whom police discovered passed out in Oregon City area thought he could skate with only a, quote, legal amount of methamphetamine in his pocket. Except he was also found in possession of a stolen vehicle. The suspect was found unconscious and in possession of a torch-style lighter and pipe along with the meth, which he described to a Clackamas County deputy as a legal amount. There is no legal amount of methamphetamine in Oregon, but a voter-approved ballot measure that took effect this week did indeed decriminalize possession of less than 2 grams of meth, along with small amounts of heroin, LSD, oxycodone, and other hard drugs. Possession is still legal, but the measure changed how the state's criminal justice handles those whose only crime is using or possessing street drugs. Instead of going to trial and facing possible jail time, offenders will be assessed a misdemeanor and a $100 fine. As an incentive to seek treatment, violators could avoid that fine by agreeing to a health assessment. As part of the new law, the Oregon Health Authority is also providing new resources and treatment options, funded in part by the state's cannabis tax revenue. Unfortunately for this suspect, Measure 110 made no such landmark rollbacks for the crime of stealing vehicles. The vehicle was returned to its owner and the suspect went to jail, the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office said.
Police beat for the weeks of December 22nd through January 4th. On December 22nd at 1:52 a.m., two juveniles in violation of curfew were found in possession of alcohol. Their parents were contacted. On December 23rd at 1:30 p.m., report of hit-and-run damage to a parked vehicle. Merry Christmas to that person. On December 24th at 1:03 a.m., a pedestrian in a closed park was arrested on an outstanding warrant. On December 25th at 12:03 a.m., somebody saw Santa Claus. I'm joking. Someone was arrested for DUI and reckless driving. On December 26th at 1:22 a.m., following a traffic stop, the uninsured and unlicensed driver who was in possession of identification documents belonging to various individuals was arrested on an outstanding warrant for possession of methamphetamine, giving false information to police officers, forgery, and identity theft. At 11 p.m., a vehicle traveling recklessly was stopped and the driver was arrested for DUI, recklessly endangering, and reckless driving. On December 27th at 4:24 p.m., a speeding vehicle was stopped and the driver was arrested for DUI. At 6:40 p.m., report of hit-and-run damage to a parked vehicle. At 11:03 p.m., a suspended driver was operating an uninsured vehicle and was arrested on an outstanding warrant. On December 28th at 10:27 p.m., a person knocking on random residents' doors was located and given a trespass warning. On December 29th at 1:12 a.m., report of theft of beer from a convenience store. I guess they were just getting ready to, you know, party the new year in early. Or illegally. Both. On December 30th at 3:02 a.m., several juvenile pedestrians were stopped due to the hour and found to be in possession of marijuana. The juveniles were released to custody of their parents. On December 31st at 9:15 a.m., response to a vehicle crash that involved a pedestrian. 5:50 p.m., an uninsured vehicle was stopped and the suspended driver was cited for the traffic offenses and for possession of drug paraphernalia. At 11:20, driver was arrested for DUI, alcohol, reckless driving, and reckless endangering. On January 1st at 1:40 a.m., driver was arrested for DUI, recklessly endangering, and reckless driving. At 9:11 p.m., driver arrested for DUI, reckless driving. At 11:14, response to a domestic dispute, suspect arrested for harassment and criminal mistreatment. A really strong way to start the year there, I think. On January 2nd at 12:48 a.m., response to a report of a suspicious circumstance, suspect arrested on an outstanding warrant. At 7:35 a.m., report of a speed sign having been pulled from the ground and left in the road. Look, if you're gonna steal a speed sign, then take it. Don't leave it in the road. Because then people, I don't know why you would do that in the first place. It doesn't make any sense. On January 4th at 10:06 a.m., response to an incomplete 911 call, suspect arrested for assault. 2:47 p.m., theft of clothing items from a farm store. And finally at 5:30 p.m., driver arrested for DUI, controlled substance, and a passenger in the vehicle was arrested for shoplifting. Wonder if they stole some clothing items from a farm store.
Stay connected to what matters most this winter with unlimited high-speed internet from DirectLink. While things may look a little different this year, as we all work together to keep everyone as safe and healthy as possible, you can be confident that DirectLink's reliable network will keep your video calls, Snapchats, stories, and photos crystal clear and at your fingertips whenever you need them. In 2021, DirectLink is thankful for all of their amazing members and is proud to be your local internet, video, and voice provider for over 116 years. Okay, well, right now we'd like to welcome back Tyson Baffert and Rochelle Rocky George of the Route 99 Roadhouse. Guys, as I think everyone in the state of Oregon knows by this point, the Roadhouse's liquor license was suspended this week. And that kind of thing by nature tends to be a very one-sided story. It's the state saying what happened and why they took the action they did. And what we really wanted to do here is just give you guys a chance to share your side of the story, if you will. So welcome.
Oh, thank you. Pleasure being here.
Thanks so much for doing this. I guess my first question is, do you guys dispute what the state said in their notice that the Roadhouse was not following all of the COVID mandates as far as employees and customers wearing masks, indoor dining, occupancy limits, that sort of stuff?
We are not disputing it. We're not going to court. We're settling because we did do all of those things.
Okay.
The reasoning of why we did those things and how we did those things, those are the details that are not listed in any of the articles. And that is the game changer for us. It's not like we just opened the doors and went crazy with it and said, do what you want, when you want, how you want. So it kind of began in the Open Malala movement with the mayor of Sandy. He was opening Sandy January 1st. Lots of cities were getting on board, different restaurants. As we well know, a lot of people fizzled out, but we did not. So we reopened. We were open for a week and we did social distancing, masks. We did every single regulation that we had been at prior to the outside shutdown.
Gotcha.
And we did that for a week. OLCC came in. We had our hands slapped. They asked, you know, what is your plan moving forward? And I said, quite frankly, I don't know. Because the outdoor dining being the nature of our business, being more of a venue, not a restaurant. Yes, we sell food, but our sales are a fifth of our alcohol sales. And that's not enough to sustain us. And we chose not to do to-go drinks because at the end of the day, to me, that means you're drinking and driving. And morally, I can't stand for that. Like, I understand that it's trying to help businesses, but as a seasoned restaurant worker of 18 years and holding my servers permit for all these years, it's been beat into my head, bars don't do to-go cups. And so we just weren't comfortable with that. So we chose not to. But at some point we had to figure out something else that worked. So we did the Open Malala movement. Then we closed down for a week. And in that meantime, we worked on an alternative route, which is becoming a private members only clubhouse. That is an absolute play on words and a play on the mandate, but a lot of the mandates are specifically stated to bars and restaurants open to the public, per se. At the end of the day, we were no longer open to the public. We were open to, I'm sorry, my phone distracted me. We were open to members only. So when you came in, there was bylaws and there was all sorts of things. You had to fill out a membership form. You had to pay a membership due. Then at that point, now, well, it's a slippery slope, but we can open up. So we did, and we brought people back inside. If people didn't want to wear masks, they didn't have to. Some people did. It was up to the servers whether they wanted to wear masks or not. And from there, we moved forward. With that being said, OLCC came in about a week afterwards, and we spoke to them, but it was one of the agents that's not as much an enforcing agent, but more an investigative agent. So he didn't have a lot to say, but we had a great conversation with him for over an hour. He left, and then we just kind of waited to hear what was going to happen. Then we heard from our OLCC agent. I was dealing with a pretty heavy personal week. So Tyson took that call and said, obviously, you know, you need to speak to Rocky about all the things because she's the head of this ship. So on Monday, she'll give you a call, at which point this was just now this last Monday. I did. She was unavailable. And then on Tuesday, we got our suspension notice. So with that being said, our warning was when we were doing the Open Malala, which is when we were following all the COVID guidelines, all of the you know, safety precautions of the sanitizing and the masks and the, you know, big gaps between our tables.
Right. So that movement, just to kind of explain to people, at least my understanding, and it's just how you're explaining it as well, but it's basically there's a different tiers that the state has now, right? The extreme risk, the high risk. Clackamas County, like most of the populous counties in the state, is still at the extreme risk. And at that level, gyms are closed, can only do outdoor activities, restaurants can only do outdoor dining. Whereas at the next tier, the high risk, everything can be allowed to be open with these still like really strict guidelines with the masks, like you said, like really severe occupancy limits and whatnot. And what this Open Sandy, Open Malala movement is basically just, even though Clackamas County is at that extreme risk, they're acting as if we're at the high risk. Did I do that accurately? Okay.
Yeah. Correct. So essentially it was going a step back. Now there are lots of groups that went crazy with it. We had, you know, people offer to come stand in front of the building and essentially guard it, you know, militias and whatnot. And again,
you don't say.
Oh, weird, right? But we declined because we don't want to fight the big fight. Like, do we feel like restaurants and bars and small businesses like us have a big old bullseye on our back? Abso-freaking-lutely, 1,000%. The bias on how this place can be open for that, but this place can't be open here. This place can have a lot of people packed inside, but this place can't. We feel extremely picked on. You know, we feel like we just can't catch a break. And so that was where a lot of the frustration from, I feel like a lot of these people banding together to pull together is coming from. Of course, we feel that way. However, the biggest thing that we understand is we live in one nation. We are united. That is the first word of the great country that we live in. And we have to play by the rules. We have to play by the book and be a team player. So as much as we feel that our governor is really singling us out, and it's frustrating, we are still going to be compliant, right? And so that was the direction that we were going. And the clubhouse mentality, which other restaurants and bars are taking that platform as well. There's multiple open now.
Yeah.
Was just a different option that we want to try. And that's all that we did. However, OLCC has not actually been able to go inside to any of those restaurants, but they were able to come inside to ours. And that is why things have been handled the way they are. But at the end of the day, we're okay with that. We have no beef against OLCC. It's an organization full of wonderful men and women who have careers and jobs and families to support. And we understand they're not making the rules. They are just put in the position to enforce those rules. We're not going to argue with them. We're not going to fight them. You know, they are the front runners on Governor Brown's mandates. And unfortunately, OLCC is taking the hit. They're getting all of the anger and the frustration and the feelings because they're dealing with restaurant owners face to face, you know, and the employees that have been so negatively impacted by all of this. And that's not us. And OLCC is even, you know, each agent that I've spoken to, with the exception of one in particular, has been incredibly nice and incredibly understanding, just as we have been of them. And they've said that our outlook is a refreshing perspective, because we understand that these people 2 years ago, their job was completely different than it is now. But they want to keep their bills paid as much as we want to keep our bills paid. So we have been compliant. We've, you know, been extremely transparent with everything that we've been doing. And we're not going to protest it because we did break state mandates. We know that we did. Mm-hmm. The way we chose to do them was a slippery slope, but justifiable, because we're desperate at this point, you know, and it's been almost a year of something that was only going to be a few weeks. And all of the reserve finances are gone. All of the backup stock is gone. There's not a lot left. And for people who started this with, you know, paying for cash as we went and trying to make right a bunch of situations and paying out of pocket and not expecting others to take the hit for us, like, now we're in debt, you know, at least twice what we're worth. And it's just a wash, and it's frustrating because here we are trying to live the American dream and build this business and build this amazing history of Canby and bring it back to life. Tyler, you know, like, my passion for that place runs as deep as, you know, my bones and my body. And
yeah.
Everything is with the purest of heart and the best of intentions, because as much as we feel these small businesses are being hit, like, Walmart's not going to sponsor Canby baseball. Small businesses do, you know, like, these you know, Home Depot is not going to do a fundraiser that's going to put, you know, locals into the Polar Plunge, which raises money for the Special Olympics. They don't do that. Small businesses do. That is the heart of America. And that's what we were, raised on. And we want to continue doing that. And it's so frustrating when you see these huge big box stores and huge corporations being able to essentially do whatever they want. And we can't.
They're fully open. They've been open.
Yeah.
And they what record number record numbers for construction and stuff like that. So there's, you know, and like it's craziness. It's absolute. It's crazy. And as much as I got something to say, you know, as much as people will be like, oh, well, you should have applied for the PPP, you know, and there's things set up for you like that. Unfortunately, in our situation, we work a lot of the hours. And so that didn't work in our situation.
We got PPP, but it wasn't, I mean, it was pennies on the dollar. It was sure a little bit of relief. And honestly, when we reopened after the main closure from COVID, because we had that, it took stress off of our plate. We could do that order to get the food back in. You know, I could catch up on, you know, the broadband bill and the not even the power bill, quite frankly, but it was barely enough to cover 2 months worth of rent in our space, let alone all the other back bills.
Yeah.
This thing keeps getting drug on and on and on. And so that stacked up.
And every change and every mandate that comes, us restaurant owners are expected to jump through all these crazy loops, but it's not a normal loop. It's like a loop with a hole and a keyhole and a little box and don't trip, you know, and it's ever changing. And to implement any new structure in any business is difficult. There's a lot of factors that go into place. And we're getting told we have to do this every couple months. As soon as we start to get the hang of the new normal, boom, something changes.
Yeah.
And it is.
Right.
COVID to now, they've all been the same.
Right.
So we're expected to pay the same amount of bills, yet for how long we weren't even allowed to open our doors.
Right. Isn't it weird how the expenses don't seem to follow the revenue quite as closely as. Yeah.
And I think that a lot of people were getting a lot of, you know, people kind of angry, you know, how dare you open and stuff like that, which we're not the first ones to do this. We weren't the second or third ones or anything like that. And there have been people that have been doing it for months.
Yeah.
You know, with this clubhouse per se type thing. So,
but I think ultimately,
smart people that.
Well, I think as this drags on, more Oregonians are getting desperate, right? Yeah. People who are perfectly logic and rational and sane and loving and caring and nice and upstanding citizens are finally getting to the point where they're feeling pinned and they're getting put in a corner. And, you know, I've said this analogy my whole life for a million different reasons. The nicest, most kindest family golden retriever will bite somebody if pinned in a corner for too long. And, you know, that's kind of what I feel like I see happening with, we would have never ever pushed boundaries in the past. There's no way in God's green earth we would ever try to figure out loopholes to get around OLCC. OLCC is part of the business and part of how we can run. And we expect that we're going to have to follow every single regulation. Same with Oregon Lottery, same with Clackamas County, you know, food and safety. Like, we understand that. But when the rules keep changing like they do, something has got to give. And so this was merely a sidestep. But we, even the last weekend we were open, we were so stupidly packed that for the first time ever in Route 99 history, we closed the door. We were like, we're done. We don't want any more people in here. Like, this is pandemonium. But at the end of the day, not in a negative way, it was smiles and happiness and laughter. And, you know, and the 2 weeks we did the clubhouse, it was, and then the week we did Open Malala, something that we didn't expect were hugs and high fives and handshakes and tears. And, you know, these amazing people who were just so happy to have a night off and to feel normal and to feel like we get to do what we've always done, you know, especially teachers. I've noticed we've had a handful of teachers come in, and with everything they've been going through with the school, their entire life is completely different. Their whole career is completely changed. And I feel like they can relate to us. And I would say teachers are the one profession that sticks out most in my brain of people that say, I am a teacher and I needed this night. Thank you so much, as they're hugging us, you know. And that was kind of the fuel of, okay, like, this is good what we're doing. You know, it's different. And yes, some people are really frustrated with what we're doing, but you don't have to come here. You can just keep driving by, you know, and when we did the clubhouse, we literally had partitions up at the door. So you weren't bombarded with what we were doing. You didn't have to come in if you were nervous or apprehensive. No hard feelings. We'll see you in a few months. Have a great day. Enjoy going somewhere else.
And we had somebody manning the door too to explain, like, hey, so that people didn't, you know, walk in and be like, whoa, you know, like it was your choice. You could come in and become a member or not.
Yeah.
So.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with three realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor. Mm-hmm. So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was gonna go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate and we got in a carriage ride with the horse and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months, sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Mm-hmm. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life. Mm-hmm.
How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for explaining all that. Like I it's so calmly and rationally. Thank you. There is obviously, as you know, a lot of tension, a lot of frustration from all different sides with people with this. And I think that it's very easy not being in your shoes or the shoes of other business owners that have been so impacted to sort of say, just follow the rules or whatever. So I really appreciate you guys. It may not change anyone's mind necessarily, but at least they can understand where you're coming from with that. And thank you for the nice things you said about the OLCC. That was not expected. I remember talking with one of my contacts over there about this issue, you know, with you guys as well. And they kind of said, you know, these rules were put on us as well. Like they didn't ask for this. They didn't ask to be at war with the industry that they manage. You know, they know that it's not popular. It wasn't their choice either. So they're just trying to do the best they can as well. So thank you guys for being so understanding of that. I thought it was funny. Oh, go ahead.
I want to point out too, which we did this, we've done a few interviews now. And so we are calm and we are sitting here and we are feeling okay in this moment, but please don't mistake that. There's not fear in our hearts still, because next week we find out essentially what our punishment is for the violations that we've willfully done. Yeah. They understand our justification. They understand our logic behind it. They're not shaming us for that. But they're also not patting us on the back for, you know, the ingenuity and creativeness of trying to figure out something, but they've all said, but we understand why you did it. But it is scary and stuff. I mean, the day we got the suspension, I remember my girls came home from school and I had asked them, do you guys want to go to your dad's for the night? You know, and they were like, no, like what, why? You know, and his mom had a rough day at work, blah, blah, blah. And my girls are 11 and 13. And so they were like, what's going on, mom? You know, they kind of pushed me into it. And next thing you know, I was crying with my daughters, asking them, like, a mom doesn't know what she wants to be when she grows up, if not this, because there's so much love and there's so much history. I'm sorry. And we've just worked so hard. My whole family's worked hard. Like, my kids have the apartment upstairs. That's pretty much their heyday up there, but they've sacrificed as well. You know, mom isn't home doing the things with them that I used to do, because there is so much passion and work and heart in that building. And at the end of the day, it would be such a shame to lose it all. Because why are we losing it? Because we didn't do everything we were supposed to? No, because we didn't serve food and take care of people and pay our taxes and pay our bills and bust our butts to stay current? No, because we were horrible business owners? No, because of COVID. And it's, we can't control that. And I understand that. But how come other places aren't being stressed out about covering their bills, but we are, and yet there's no relief? I mean, this, the new PPP that's coming out, I'm really excited that you have to show, be able to show that you lost, but that should have been in place the first time. I think of the tens of thousands of millions of dollars that went out to these businesses that are having record-breaking years while we're robbing Peter to pay Paul just to stay afloat.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating and it's sad and it makes me so angry. And then, you know, if you go to Idaho, they are wide open. You know, and so it just depends on who's running your state. And so based on the opinion of a singular person, tens of thousands of families are being displaced, whether it be restaurant workers, restaurant owners, karaoke guys, musicians, distributors, you know, our beer reps are dissolving by the day. Like, we rarely see the same people because so many people are getting laid off. Our beer drivers, two of them just had babies and now they're stressed out because they get paid per case they unload these trucks every day. Well, now there's like hardly anything because none of the restaurants are doing these orders and their trucks are half full. And so their incomes are ripped down, you know? So now there's stress on their families and it trickles so much. The producers that produce the music, the people that, the tour managers, you know, that I speak to schedule these tours, now there's no tours, you know, and the struggle just expands nationally. Just because of Oregon, if that doesn't sound too extreme, but it's real. And I have so many people I'm connected with that are struggling and that are scared and that are struggling to make ends meet. We're down to just a staff of three because it's all we can afford. And like, it's not lucrative. It's not kicking butt. You know, when people were in, the tips were really, really nice. And so at the end of the day, it got divided and everybody was feeling a little bit of relief and happiness. And it was such a blessing to feel that like, feeling at the end of it and not the carried stress. Like, it is so scary and we don't know what's going to happen. And we're continuing on like this is temporary. We're going to do some, you know, renovations to the building, nothing too crazy or big, but things we've just been wanting to do that we need to be closed down to do. And we're going to take this opportunity, but there is a small chance no one will ever get to see our work. And can I even tell you the perspective of coming into this, paying for everything in cash as we go, busting our butts for 2 years, because that's how long we've almost had it, dealing with everyone telling us you're not going to make it, you're horrible, you're losers, this is never going to go anywhere. You know, Cambi didn't receive us too well, but now we're winning them over a day at a time. And then we lose it. And when we lose it, we're in breach of our lease. So they get all of the new equipment we put in there, all of the tables, all of the chairs, all of the upgrades, all of the things we've spent our personal money on and our blood, sweat, and tears on. Then the next person that leases it in a year when COVID lifts gets a turnkey business and I get to drive by that building and see my sign that I literally drew by my hands, you know, my creation, my thing, and all because of my timing. And it just, that's where it doesn't seem fair. It doesn't seem right because they would get to go into this debt-free, you know, by the cost of the business and whatnot through the landlords, which we wouldn't see any of that. And at the end of the day, they get to run this business and do what I've been trying to do since day one. You know, and then the back rent we owe our landlords is ridiculous. So if we lose the business, we never get to pay them back. And what do those guys do? That's not fair.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's the passionate stuff. That's the hard stuff. So it is easy and we are calm and collected. And in my mind, I'm just saying, well, you know, we made great money the 2 weeks we were closed. I have a little peace of mind. I already paid 2 months worth of rent in advance right now. So we can kind of float out what's going to happen. So that feels good. But that money is going to run out. And then now what? You know, I know I'm not going to have an income for the next month to contribute to our house. If it wasn't for this guy right here, I would be a freaking train wreck of a mess of emotion. I wouldn't know what to do. And so that's the reality of it. And it would just be such a shame to lose it all because we want to fundraise. We want to sponsor teams and kids and families and do Christmas sponsorships like we've done. And the whole point of Route 99 for us wasn't to retire. It wasn't to do great things. You know, it wasn't to go to Mexico, which for all the haters about we went to Mexico, That's his dad. He lives there.
I want to go see my family.
We go see his family in Mexico. Is it a horrible spot to visit? No. Is it so much fun? Yes. But his dad knows all the people, and we get vouchers for dirt cheap to go stay at these places. So stop judging, y'all. Jeez Louise, family first. Anyways,
yeah, I would go see my father. Who's that?
Sorry.
Ripped apart about like, that COVID and then
travel. Crazy tangent. Yeah.
Go see my dad.
Before Christmas, like,
he's a citizen of Mexico.
That I didn't even know about that. That wasn't going to be my next question, but thanks for
it. Yeah, it's crazy.
It's crazy. We get ripped apart for everything, and I'm like,
yeah, that's hard. And that I do get that is hard when it sort of turns personal, because there is so much tension and so much anger from people for different reasons and from different sides. So sorry you guys have had to go through all that.
I had no idea when we got into bar ownership, we would be on blast and it would be so cutthroat and people would be so cruel and so judgmental, because I have the mentality, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. You know, so if you don't like what we're doing, that's okay. You don't have to come. You don't have to be friends with us. You don't have to, you know, deal with us, like ignore us, block our page, block whatever, out of sight, out of mind. I had no idea that we would do. And it's been this way from the beginning in the community. Would just get shredded. And we try not to fight back and explain our perspective of why we did what we did or why we did it, but it's always done with the best of intentions and the purest heart. There's no big scandal going on here. There's no secret thing going on here. We're just trying to repair one of Camby's older buildings that has an amazing history and restore it. And instead of it being an eyesore when you come into town, we want it to be a big welcome beacon that says, welcome to Camby, y'all. We're this cute, darling town that loves what we love. You know, come to the fair, enjoy it, support local businesses. You know, we want people to be proud of the things that we do. And it's sometimes just so frustrating, but it is such a passion project and it is all so personal to us. Our kids are so darn proud of that place. They want the stickers. They've been grilling us for sweatshirts forever. You know, like they think it is so cool, because at the end of the day, their teacher will be like, oh my gosh, I remember going there 35 years ago with my grandfather for dinner on Tuesdays or whatever. And they're like, yeah, we know that spot too. And they love it. And that type of stuff just creates smiles and like a heartwarming like feeling just kind of going all throughout you. And the building's dilapidated, you know, past ownership just didn't really care about the bones of the building, and they just wanted to make money as they could, and they didn't necessarily want to spruce the place up. The landlords love us because we're like, what can we do next? Like, let's pick the worst possible thing and fix that. And we do a lot of it on our dime and on, you know, our labor and our backs. And the landlords just kind of laugh at us and they think it's great and wonderful, and they're like, do what you want to do. And they help us as they can, and it's been a really great relationship, but I just feel like we can't win right now. And the deck is stacked completely against us. And as a little kid, it just flat out, it's not fair. That's what it feels like. I want to throw a temper tantrum and stomp and scream at my parents how this isn't fair. I did everything the way I was supposed to. It's all legitimate, all by the book. And what's happening to the restaurants everywhere is just so frustrating.
Yeah.
Well, guys, I hear you. Thank you again for sharing that perspective that a lot of people may not understand or be fully acquainted with. Hang in there. I know, and I think I've even seen you say on some of the comments that for all the haters out there, you've seen a lot of support and way more support. So I hope that's encouraging to you. Thank you guys so much for your time today. Is there anything quick you'd like to say before you go?
I don't think so.
No, just bear with us as we work through this. When we reopen, we will be compliant. We will be back outside, you know.
Yeah.
Something that I touched on that I think I forgot to is last weekend when we were so busy, we had decided we were going to close anyways. We were going to consider the money we made a blessing. Let's rat hold that in the bank account, get some bills caught up, put a nice chunk towards our back rent, and then let's go back to outside. And we knew we couldn't do it right away because we would just be so bombarded with people at the door. And so we were like, let's close for at least 2 weeks and to kind of reset everybody, because what we were doing is not what we set out to do. We didn't expect to be as busy as we were. It's foolish. Of course, we're going to be busy. We're the only place in town, but we didn't expect that volume because we had never seen that kind of volume. And we realized pretty quick, it's not manageable in any way, shape or form. And that's not what we wanted. You know, we don't want people to feel unsafe. We don't want people to feel crowded if they don't want to feel crowded. And with how busy we got, we were. And so we were prepared to step back and kind of reset things and be like, and the clubhouse thing, the more we looked into it with an attorney, the more it was like, this is like pretty questionable. You know, this works really well for some places, platforms, but not necessarily for us. And we had no problem pulling back. And we were going to do that. And OLCC knew we were going to do that. And, you know, again, they were happy to hear that. They were like, oh, okay, great. Because we are logical, we are understanding, and we are compassionate. We don't want anybody to get sick because of us, which sounds crazy considering all the bad press going on. But at the end of the day, we also want people to feel like they have a choice whether to subject themselves or to not subject themselves. And we're not going to take that choice away. And we don't expect anybody to do anything they're uncomfortable with, like we've been forced to do things that we're uncomfortable with because of the governor's mandates. And so at this point, we're happy to pull back. We're happy to take a break. We're happy to work on the building a little bit. And then when we reopen, it'll be slow and steady and it will be safe and there will be masks and there will be all of the things that people need to feel confident and secure in our establishment.
Well, those updates will come on your guys' Facebook page, Route 99 Roadhouse. So stay tuned to that. And again, Tyson, Rocky, thank you guys so much and hang in there.
Thanks for having us, Ted. All right, thanks, always a pleasure.
Hey, Frankie, you okay? You seem kind of down.
Yeah, I'm just bummed. Miss going to the Wild Hare. I know you can still get takeout and all, but it's just not the same.
You know they're open again, right?
What?
Yeah, they've been open for a while now. Don't you cover, like, the news?
Hey, I'm only human, okay?
Okay. Well, I can tell you that the Wild Hare and their amazing staff are thrilled to be open again for delicious meals and fun times. They are strictly following all the recommended safety guidelines, and they have the only covered outdoor patio in Canby, with lots of tables spaced 6 feet apart and umbrellas also spaced 6 feet apart and fantastic ambiance. And hey, if you're still more comfortable with carryout, they can hook you up there too. Find their menu and other information online at thewildhairsaloon.net or check them out in Canby and Oregon City. Anything to add, Frankie? Frankie? Oh, I guess he left. God, he must have been really hungry. Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.